It is Thursday, the 2nd of October, and this is the 224th episode of Digital Outbox. Yeah, celebrate 224 episodes. Why should it always be the round numbers that we celebrate, eh?
That is a round number.
Well, it's...
I see.
Well, it's not a rounded number. It's not like 225 or 250. Anyway, yes, 224 of these we've done now. myself, Chris, and Ian's here as well. Hello, Ian.
I was already feeling tired, but now you've made me feel old and tired.
Old and tired. Yes, so you... If anyone wants to go back through the catalogue, they can, right? They can start from the beginning.
Crack on. The first kind of 10 until Chris turned up are quite grim.
Super excited.
Yeah. You get to hear Shaq and me talk like for 90 minutes on an iPhone 3GS.
And then they weren't going to buy them. Anyway, so let's forget the past. Let's get on with the future. And let's talk about the news as it is now. So Windows 10. I don't know what happened to Windows 9, but Windows 10 has been officially sort of announced as far as that's what it's going to be called. It is going to be the next Windows. And it's kind of harking back to Windows 7 because they've kind of realized that everyone still uses Windows 7 because they hate Windows 8.
Pretty much. I just laughed. Did you watch any of the presentation?
I watched it until it crashed, which was probably about 10 minutes in, something like that.
Yeah, so it just was like really bad. It's almost like they tried to do it as a, you're just a couple of guys, you know, talking to the team, you know, not talking to like the world. And the bit that was weird was like when they started to talk about the name, and it was like they talked about how we've got Xbox One and we've got this and we've got that, and it's a one operating system. So obviously we call it the Windows One, but somebody's already done it and they put the picture of a Bill Gates. You think, okay, funny. And then it was like, so this is like, so we're going to call it Windows 10. And then the guy had to go, I'm not joking. And you're like, this is terrible.
However, looking at the actual implementation, it certainly looked like it was back to at least being an operating system. It's got clever morphing abilities whereby it detects what kind of device it's on. And will adjust to suit. So if you've got one of these sort of Surface Pro, whatever, you detach the keyboard, then it will go to, it will move to basically being a touch interface or Microsoft implementation of a touch interface, including a kind of Metro-like interface when you click the start button. But as soon as you attach a keyboard and mouse again, it goes back to sort of what you'd expect more desktop, so back to your traditional start menu and little tiles that, you know, just allow you access into those kind of Metro apps.
Yes.
They're touting it to be available everywhere. So they're saying it's going to be desktop, Internet of Things, so, you know, little mini devices running it. They're kind of, it sounds too good to be true, which probably means it is.
Yeah, and this is a bit that worried me. And actually, so they announced this Tuesday, and yesterday there was a technical preview came out. And the interesting thing was they've done it as an ISO this time. So instead of actually having to be on a device and download it all and reinstall, mm-hmm. you can just download the ISO. So I fired up VirtualBox and I have it installed.
Okay, so you've run it already.
I have run it already. And this is a bit that worries me because Windows 8 to me was a compromise. We want to support tablets and we want to support desktops and laptops with no touch interface. But we reckon we need to force everybody to go and buy some sort of touch device. So here's Windows 8. You know, it's like Xbox One. You needed to connect to use it. You couldn't just use the joypad. And it was like infuriating. And it's almost like I still think they went that route with Windows 8.
I don't want it, but this looks
definitely
adaptive. Yeah. So and that is, this is probably the implementation it should have been originally.
Absolutely. So I fired up the VM and straight away, you know, you log in with your Microsoft account, I've got a start menu, and the start menu's and it's got the three things that you're looking for. It's got a list of apps, it's got a power off button. Because in Windows 8, trying to find how to power it off
was impossible. It was hidden.
And even in the Surface right now, so I've got a Surface, and you look at it and go, how do I power it off? And you need to swipe in from the right to get your charms up. You need to go down to like settings. And then when you hit settings, you get a little thing that says power. And it's like, why? Why is that so hidden?
Yep.
It just doesn't make sense. And there was also, you can search. So there's a nice little you know, bar where you can search. And the search is now very close to what Spotlight's like in the Mac. So you do a search, or if you've used Alfred or Launch Bar or any of these kind of launcher type apps.
Yep.
So you can just search for calculator and it'll pull up the app first, or else you can search, you know, Bing for calculator or Wikipedia for calculator. And it's all those kind of nice context sensitive, intelligent searches. And there's tiles. So the tiles haven't disappeared. The tiles are now on the start menu.
But they are, they looked certainly on screen to be implemented in a better way, for sure.
So similar to the Windows 8 front end, in that you can make them wide, you can make them live, or you can make them small, so they're just like little icons. And so they're, but yeah.
Yeah. So where Windows 8 compromised by limiting down the desktop to match and meet with the requirements of a tablet, this is almost saying, right, we will limit down the desktop to allow you to run on a tablet, kind of thing. So it's the way around you might expect it, and probably did expect it in the start. So there you go. So that's due for release end of 2015. But there are consumer previews. There's available now on a limited basis, and then it'll be sort of going to public beta and final releases later.
Because there's lots of not showed. They didn't show any browsery media type stuff. It was a very strange presentation. It was like, there's the start menu.
They know it. Eight is their trouble for them. So they need to let people know they're solving it.
Yeah, and it was fully focused on enterprise, because it was all about, there's this search and there's this task, so you can easily swap between things. And even the command prompt. I don't know if you caught the command prompt. We can now cut and paste into the command prompt,
which is amazing. That you can't. It's sort of bizarre. But...
And just on the naming, something came out. I think it was on Reddit, one of the forums, and it says it was and I've got it. I've got a screenshot here. Microsoft Dev here. The internal rumors are that early testing revealed just how many third-party products that had code of the form, and it's f:\version.starts_ Windows 9. So basically, looking for a Windows 95 and 98, they're still having to code around that, because there's still a lot of people running Windows 95 and 98. And I looked at that and thought, that smells a bit whiffy. But somebody's also done a search on some of the open source code forums, and there was like 4,000 hits for that particular kind of, you know, if you do the search for it. So maybe there is something in that this was the easiest way to give them a platform that doesn't exist right now.
There you go.
I still think it's compromised. See your thing about the Internet of Things, and it'll run on Xbox One, and it'll run on, you know, 80-inch Surface tablets. This is a mistake they made with Windows 8. I still think this could...
Oh. Yeah, they're fundamentally different things. So it'll take a clever bit of, you know, engineering. But the benefits of being able to engineer once for a device, it does. You know, there's benefits and drawbacks. They're saying you can sort of program once and distribute onto many devices, which sounds great. But then, in order to be able to cater for all those different types of devices, it's still a big programming effort.
Yeah,
and flex and adapt and respond to the different size of the screen, if it's got one at all, you know.
Yeah, even because they're saying this will run on mobile. So this is like, if you've got a 4-inch device or a tablet or a laptop or a desktop, big challenge.
Yeah. Microsoft also announced Sway is a new app that allows you to build websites effectively via WYSIWYG interface. It's going to be released as an app alongside all the sort of other Office apps. So it's actually one of their suite programs and will be operable online as well as on desktop, I guess. And it's kind of, you know, it's clever stuff. It allows you to sort of search and pull in content, and it's kind of like a blogging, you know, a blogging type application rather than a fully featured website, right?
Yeah, the strange thing is, but it kind of packages it up into like a proprietary format and then sends it on to the Microsoft servers, and they then work out how to display it on an iPhone or a tablet, or, you know, so all that kind of responsive stuff. But I don't know, it just smelled a bit weird.
I agree. There's been so many products, services, online, you know, software service, saying, yeah, we can help you create your own website. You can do it yourself, and it'll be this amazing looking thing, which sometimes you end up just having a website that looks like everyone else's that uses the same service. Other times, you know, it kind of does its kind of does all okay at some things, but you know, people have a lot of requirements of websites, right? So I don't know. From the video I watched, it was another one of these cases where it looked swanky, but that doesn't mean it's actually going to make a good site out of it.
No, it looked like another Squarespace site, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
You know, there's a kind of look to some of these sites now, or one of the kind of magazine formats in WordPress, like the big picture type thing, or as you scrolled up. But I still registered. See if I get a little beer. Give it a try.
Yeah, well, it's a nice little tool. So eBay has decided this week that they are going to spin off PayPal, which they bought a long while ago now. Comes after some pressure from some of the shareholders, because there is a feeling that eBay, the e-commerce site, is actually holding back PayPal, which is their commerce site, which is the payment site, which is actually growing a lot faster than eBay, and there was a worry that eBay was actually holding it back. PayPal have been at pains to tell us that eBay have been at pains to tell us that this spin-off is not due to that shareholder pressure, but they have decided it is a good idea, and they're going to split it. So if you're a shareholder, you get one share in each of the companies.
So instead of one hated company, they've created two.
PayPal, although they certainly went through a bad patch, I think, as far as reputation, if you like, I think they come out the other side and actually they're quite well trusted.
Yeah, and I was being a bit flat. The area that I still think is a struggle with, and I can't wrap my head around what the issues are, apart from, I guess, there's a lot of fraud somewhere and they're just doing a blanket protection, is the amount of indie conferences that they actually almost shut down, because they were basically freezing people's accounts and saying, that 30,000, we're going to freeze that right now. And they were holding it, and it was just... When I read some of the posts about it, it was like, that's that guy's income for the year that you're now going to hold, and he can't take any money out, he can't do anything with it, and there was no real way of appealing either. It was like pretty horrible. And I think there's less of that now, because I think a lot of conferences have said, we're off, we're not going to use PayPal for that. There are other routes now. I think Stripe was one of the kind of popular ones that have kind of popped up and stepped in.
But I would say I've seen more and more and more shops offering eBay payment now.
Yeah.
Whereas it went through a stage where it was kind of seen as the cheap way into e-commerce and therefore not really trusted like that. It's always, if someone had their own certificates and their own merchant account, it was always considered more professional, if you like. But I think nowadays it's considered to be a pretty good route through.
Yeah, I think it's been around for so long, and I think to the normals.
And it's a massive firm, and eBay helped that, because by them tying in with eBay, it forced everyone to have that, their PayPal account.
So and they're also, I don't know if it's just me that's seen it more, they're advertising a lot.
Loads on TV.
Yeah. I do think I read an article that said that one of the reasons they've kind of split this was the kind of, that they kind of failed to get involved with Apple Pay. Seemingly there was lots of discussions and eventually they didn't go down that route. And there was some other crazy thing that they've done that Apple didn't like. So they went, sodgy, you're out. So that's why, I mean, another reason, apart from, I'm looking for the shareholder's name, is this Carl Icahn. He was trying to do the same with Apple, bought loads of Apple shares, and then was trying to say, what you need to do is do like a share buyback. What you need to do is this, and being public about it. I've had meetings with Tim, and he did the same with eBay. So about 6 months ago, I think, he said, this is what they need to do. They need to split, and here's why. And 6 months later, they've split and said, it's nothing to do with this guy.
Yeah. But it does sound like he might have been talking a lot of sense. I think probably right. I think eBay as a concept is probably maxed, and it's got a maximum... everyone knows about it, so the people that are going to use it are using it, kind of thing. PayPal, I think more and more things are being bought online. It's the bigger grower.
No, absolutely. I think eBay could be disrupted by other people still, because it is like that. Because I know Shaq hates it with a passion. Mm. Just will use it as a last resort now. And I certainly had a couple of bad experiences recently. Couldn't get banned.
Yes, I remember you saying you got banned for no apparent reason. They wouldn't believe you.
No,
we don't mind. It's not your fault, but we know that.
They said, sorry about that. We were wrong. We hope you accept our apology.
After having had the email that said, it doesn't matter what you say about it, you're banned and we're never going to have you
apart
back
from,
again.
But please remember, you can still buy from us. You just can't sell.
So Peter Nunn has been jailed for his Twitter abuse of MP Stella Creasy. So this was a story we reported on this a while back. I don't know, probably about 12 months ago, even something like that. This is when there was a campaign to
Pound notes. Have you come to Scotland? It was Jane Austen on I don't know if it was 20 £10 or 20 quid note, £10 note. Jane Austen.
But to get her onto
note.
One of our notes, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I can't pronounce the other woman's name. Caroline Criado Perez got a lot of abuse. Stella Creasy stepped in to try and say, hold on, this is wrong. And both of them just got an absolute torrent of abuse online.
Here's all the misogynistic sort of stuff and threatening and horrible and, you know, of not this century.
Some of them you could just say their names, but other ones were like, I will come around and do this. And he was retweeting other stuff as well. So,
and he had several accounts. He wasn't just doing this via one. He was, via several accounts. So he really quite persistent on this. And you know, they took it further. Excuse me. They took it further and it has now gone to court and the judge has given him 18 months?
18 weeks.
Oh, yeah. So 18 weeks in jail. Criminal record.
So by the time I get this podcast out, he's probably back out again.
Mm-hmm.
But he does have one of these kind of harassment order type things where he can't, you know, talk to her or go anywhere near her or do anything else like that. But
I don't know whether it's, you know, proportional or not. That's what judges are good at working out, is proportionality. So
yeah.
The fact that it's gone to court, it surely will make people realise that, you know, again, another, you know, nail in the coffin of you can't just say what you like online.
No, and I've deliberately, and we've not talked about it, but the whole Gamergate stuff that's been going on for the last, 2 months? And I've kind of stayed away from talking about it on here, but it is similar, you know, and it's just like folk that think they can just do anything, say anything, get away with it. You know, and basically bully, you know, what initially basically two women, and not just bully, but I mean, it was one of the, and it's kind of reared up again today because Intel pulled an advert from one of the main gaming websites who had published an article supporting these two women or supporting one woman, and basically all the kind of guys behind Gamergate then emailed Intel and said this is terrible, blah blah blah, and they've actually pulled it because they listened to people. So they've pulled the adverts and Intel are now looking look terrible. But what one of the women pointed out was she's getting phone calls at home, you know, talk about, I'm going to come and rape you. You know, and that's horrible.
It's serious as well. I mean,
these, you know, folk like that who think they can just sit there and do what they like, jail them.
There you go. That's
jail them. Tory boy, Ian. Honestly, I'd break fingers. Yeah. I'd go around and beat them up. I know you always chuckle, but I hate all these little keyboard warriors that just think they can do what they like. It's like, do it when I'm sitting in front of you, because you won't.
Cloudflare.
Oh.
just calm you down.
Exactly, I'm getting angry.
Cloudflare, basically are offering a new product called Universal SSL. Basically, if you are on their platforms, your site can be offered up via SSL effectively for free. They're offering a free product there. I think they're saying they've got 2 million sites on their platform and they will apply this to any site who wants it for free, which is a big step for SSL. They are using some pretty good algorithms, shall we say, but it's only about compatible with about 80% of browsers. I think that's downside.
Which I was quite surprised at, but then I guess at some point you need to make the move, you know. And
Google's already said that, you know, the signals now are going to be taken into account whether you're an SSL site. That's sparking a lot of people off to go down this route, and Cloudflare are sort of saying, okay, well, you can do it easily on our platform, come here and do it for free, do it within 5 minutes and off you go.
The other surprising bit was that I thought there was obviously, like, you know, millions and millions and millions of websites, and millions and millions and millions of them will be already SSL enabled. But by doing this, they're doubling the amount of SSL enabled websites online.
And I guess what they mean by SSL enabled websites is one that is 100% served up from start to finish, every single aspect of. Whereas there are, you know, there are many, many more millions running with SSL certificates to cover checkout process, whatever.
Yeah, and that's good. And that is a good point. I bow to your knowledge.
Thank you. You are welcome. Apple, they've done something to help us avoid stolen iPads. How, what they've done?
Basically, there's a website now that you stick in the unique identifier of the phone. So that is at the IMEI number. Yeah, it's serial number or IMEI number. Mm-hmm. And it'll tell you whether that phone, whether it's the activation lock and the find your iPhone stuff has been switched off or not. Because if it's still on, it's a good indication that that phone, somebody's out there looking for it and try to hunt it down.
Yes. So the first thing you should do is if you're handed a phone, is first of all, check that those services aren't turned on. If you can get them on, if you can get it turned on in the first place, then that's a good start. But you can also check this website now just for confirmation of whether it is does have the activation on.
Because the whole premise is you can't do a factory reset now if you've got Find My iPhone enabled and you don't know somebody's iCloud password.
And then more and more when you first install your device, they're kind of almost insisting. All the prompts are sort of. Find my iPhone. Turn it on. Turn them all on. Yeah, that's fine. Do it.
I mean,
make sure I turn no.
Yeah. Well, in some ways, also, if somebody gave you a phone and says, do you want to buy this? And it had like my 300 apps on it, you'd be a bit suspicious. You'd be like,
loads of free apps on this one here for you.
Yeah. the other thing that's really weird, you can't run it from mobile Safari. So you need to have a desktop or a laptop with you.
Right. So, and does it have to be Safari?
I don't know. It just
again more
work.
And more Apple things are saying, you know, via Safari again now. They're going very, very, you know, use our product.
Yeah. I don't know, because I know iCloud's available like for Windows.
Okay.
I think the only place it's not available is probably in a Chromebook. But even then, I just use it through Chrome. It seems to be fine.
DVLA.
Oh,
no longer going to have tax disc. The rip the tax disc. So mine was up for renewal, so I had to head over to the website where they got a new service up and running, so you could go and renew your tax disc. And I actually managed to process through, which was it was a bit slow and a bit clunky. But as it turns out, that's because there were so many people accessing the site to register for their new tax disc. I always used to renew online anyway.
Yes, so did I.
So I guess this is just the remainder of people who were still going down to the post office with their documents to do it, now getting online and finally doing it. But yes, it did crash for a while. They said they were a bit inundated and swamped. I guess as time goes on, that will even itself out. But I guess at the end of every month is when they're going to get their peak, right?
Yeah. There were 6,000 visits a minute. And this was at 9:45 on Tuesday night. So I guess as you're saying, it's like, oh, crap. This is the last day of September. We better go
online.
We've
actually directed everyone to go to the website. Damn it, we better.
And it's a
shock horror there.
So this was a new service from the Government Digital Service who do a lot of good things, and I do follow a lot of what they do.
The process was easy. It was straightforward. It was, you know, fine. It just took a little bit longer than it normally would.
It just looks like it was a load issue, you know, whether it was a miscalculation on how many people. It's interesting, they did a post and actually started to say, well, but Vodafone, you know, and it's Vodafone that we've got to fix this, and we've got Vodafone engineers monitoring this, as if it was it's not really us, it's Vodafone's back end.
It's having been involved in it more and more now, you know, real high capacity sites and, you know, monitoring, maintaining them, especially during peak load. It is a hard, hard thing to work out. You can do all the load testing you like. You can do all the pre-testing you like. But the actual real load you get from a real, real surge of activity is very different. And it's kind of unpredictable in its nature. You know, it's peaks and troughs.
No, absolutely. And I guess some of the stuff you're working with, I guess if something goes a bit viral or something just takes off, it's like, how do you predict something
Social media is a big one. So they pump out a tweet linking to a site. It's, you know, if an account has, you know, 20 million users, it doesn't take very many of those users to actually click on that link straight away to suddenly have a massive, massive peak. I mean, and you see it from, you know, other podcasts who podcast live and they send a link out to a particular site or they just say a link.
Exactly.
And boom, it disappears. So it's, you know, and the same with the BBC. If the BBC radio ever announce a web address, it kills it almost instantly. It's just because it's so, it's impossible to cater for that. No. It's not impossible, but you'd be spending an awful lot of money on infrastructure.
I think that's the thing. It's standard, but it's also testing those one-off to make sure, because you can put a whole lot of cash in place, put a whole lot of infrastructure in place, but you just don't know. You don't know. And I know you can simulate, but as you're saying, the simulation is never, it's never the same.
And you know, caching servers have their limit. You know, they're not, they need to be scaled as well. But anyway, so that's DVLA. It's all up and running again now, and hopefully it's all a bit smoothed out. Podcasting. Who knew? It's getting more and more popular, apparently.
We're going to make money.
Yes.
Hold on.
Apparently, some people are making money.
Let me just, dear BAE Systems, I resign.
We're experienced in this world now. We should be rolling in it, right?
We should be running courses. Hold on. Stop doing podcasts. We should be running courses.
This is how you run a podcast to make money.
Yeah.
And you do it by running courses.
Yeah.
Telling people how to run. Isn't that a pyramid scheme, I think?
But if we're in first.
Yeah. As long as you're at the top of the pyramid, it's fine.
Kaboom.
Yeah.
Have we just given the game away?
Damn.
I'll do it in edit. Don't worry.
Well, it's... Not enough people are listening to us. Tip over. So, you know, hello to anyone listening to our podcast. apparently, an average of 1.5 million listeners download 99% Invisible.
Yeah. What have we done wrong?
That's a massive audience. You know, that's you know, there's plenty of TV channels that don't get viewing figures anything near that. You know, so that's amazing.
I'm sure there's some channels that don't get 1.5 viewers. Never mind. Yeah.
And you know, radio stations who, you know, that's a massive radio audience. But the convenience of you know, downloading a show on demand whenever you like, and that now the fact that it's all tuned into your cars and you can have got your Bluetooth and stuff, it makes it very, very easy to pick up a podcast and have that as, you know, your regular listening. You can get most topics now covered by some pretty professional organizations.
Absolutely. And I think America still is probably the bigger audience, not just because of the amount of people, but the amount of commutes they do just seems to be all a bit longer. But I'm actually surprised at the number of folk at work. Just randomly, they'll be like, oh, yeah, I just listen to podcasts, so I'm going to the gym. And it's just normal. Whereas, see when we started doing this, what, 6 years
What's
ago?
What's a podcast?
And I would say, I've got a podcast, and be like, huh?
You have to describe it as kind of radio, but kind of just downloaded radio.
It's like radio, but good. That's what I used to say. and then they listen to it once, and we're like, you weren't that good. Oh, cheers.
So, hello. Hello.
Oh, Jesus.
Hello. This is a new social network, the latest one, the shiny one. And basically, they have released, or they've been inundated with people trying to join them. They're on an invite-only basis at the moment. Their kind of concept is that they... We're not going to sell your data. We're not tracking you. We're not spying on you. Come over here. Everything's lovely. But unfortunately, they're now receiving like 20,000 people invites sent every hour. And they just cannot cope with the data. So there's a big stack of people wanting to get in who can't. And because their model and their mantra is, we will not track you. We will not sell you data. It's impossible to identify how they're going to be able to support this number of people. The kind of founders have said, we weren't expecting anywhere near this number of people interested, and we're kind of caught on a hop, and we don't know what to do yet. We'll deal with it as best we can.
Yeah, and it was the kind of lesbian gay community kind of almost moved on flop just because of the issues that they've got in Facebook. You know, try to get their real names, don't want to use their real names for certain reasons, and Facebook are still going down and you must have used your real name, you know, and all that kind of stuff.
And I think some gay publications and stuff sort of announced this may be the place to go if you want to fight against that. And
yeah,
I think that's what probably shoved so much good data their way, basically.
Absolutely. And the only thing, I mean, you talked about the, you know, how they're going to scale. I mean, they have what was, and I don't know if it's sneaky or not, they have had, I think it was a, I'm trying to remember the figure now. They have had quite a big investment from a venture capitalist.
I think it was only £50,000, which again is a big chunk of money. But again, it, when you're talking infrastructure to support this many people, it's much bigger money than that.
And also just to, you know, engineering wise, to start scaling up and being able to support, because their features list is tiny at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But they're saying they do want to grow it to be. Whoa. I mean, it's been going for 6 months. This hasn't just started like 2 weeks ago, and it just took off. It was just
as you know, viral videos. They're off and around for months and months, and then suddenly, and then, boom, they kick.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I just can't see it. It's a bit like App.net. App.net got a lot of traction, and then it just kind of.
It's always the next shiny thing. It sounds very much like. They're going to offer no. There's going to be no paid blockage to get. Paid blockage to get in, but they will start charging for features because how else are they going to be able to support this? And unfortunately, unless you almost need an even bigger number of people to be able to start charging to actually support. You know, to bring in that, because you don't want to charge a lot because it'll put people off straight away.
No, and the talked about thing. I think it was talked about like $2 for a certain feature. You know, so if you wanted to like direct message. It's a one-off fee of $2, and then after that, once you've paid it once, you can direct message. And I guess what they're hoping for is it's such a small transaction, you know, it's like an in-app purchase, that you do it and it's fine. Because WhatsApp moved to that, didn't they? Every year you pay.
But people aren't used to it.
They aren't used to it, and they've not got the volume. You know, unless all your friends are on there and you're having that conversation, you're going to be like, what? Where are they? And that's the, I mean, App.net. I liked what it did, but it failed because. Most of the people I wanted to talk to were on Twitter, and they weren't on App.net.
Never say never, but it's going to take more than that and a better model to actually support the kind of the pretense behind it, I think.
I don't know if it's linked. Facebook did apologise tonight for their experiments. Remember the psychological experiments they did on using people's data? They have come out and apologised and said, okay. That was wrong.
Yeah.
Now, that smells a bit. You know, and I'm not saying it's linked to this. I'm not saying they're seeing a big drop-off in people. But if they are getting 35,000 people an hour and that is continuing, you know, and there is a big high demand, maybe they're starting to see a little dip somewhere and they thought, right, we need to be a bit positive.
Sorry about that one. We're not sorry about the rest. Pebble have had to react to all the other smartphones that are being released. So Pebble was the first one done by a Kickstarter campaign?
Oh, yes.
And basically they are now reducing the price of their devices and they're putting out a new firmware update and they're kind of announcing partnerships with a number of other say fitness tracker type and, you know, pedometer type trackers.
Well done, Pebble.
Yeah, but I think I think they probably, you know, it's either do that or die.
Yeah, I mean, I think their kind of original one, which is the kind of more kind of plasticky looking one, does look cheaper than, you know, the other ones that are out there now. They are they're not alone. And there's lots of people out there saying, see, for $200 or $300. And there was other products that do look nice. I'm not saying they've got more functionality. I did talk to a friend of the show, Brian, about it, and he was like, nope, still loving the Pebble. Not tempted by Android Wear or the Apple Watch in any way, shape or form. Not that that will change next year, because they'll obviously hope to iterate, you know, fairly quickly. But it's interesting also just, I mean, it's actually, it's going to be, and it's the first time I've seen it used in anger, it's going to be in the Carphone Dixons in the UK, which is just a terrible name.
It is pretty poor, isn't it? Pretty poor. There you go. UK government has finally caught up with probably the last 15, 20 years of digital content. They are now allowing us to make rips of CDs, to take MP3s within our cars, to take copies of DVDs and even put them onto cloud services for our own personal backup purposes. You're still not allowed to do anything like share it. You're certainly not allowed to sell your original device and keep your backups. You must sell them on. But basically, it kind of makes more sense it would have made more sense 15 years ago, but makes just as much sense now if not things have moved on quite a lot.
Yeah. Finally, but there's still DRM to hell, so you're probably still going to struggle to get content off.
Yes, there's certainly, like, you know, an Xbox One game you could never back up probably anyway, because you could never use it anyway. Still, good move. At least it's been done. It took them a while, but they got there in the end. And Radiohead, Tom York has announced. Radiohead's Tom York. So Tom York is releasing an album. of his own music, and he's going to release it via torrents. But this is going to be the first ever paid for torrent.
Yep, £3. It's already out. Dead easy to download. Dead fast to download, and it worked.
So that people have done these. They're called BitTorrent bundles. So effectively, you need it's kind of a gate into being able to download that torrent. But this is the first one ever that's required money. The others have just sort of been email lists or whatever.
Yeah,
scrapers.
And the way it works is 10% goes to BitTorrent. So there's a 10% goes to them, and the rest basically goes to the artist. So Tom York should hopefully see most of that, and I guess he'll then obviously have to pay for studio costs, etc. But the whole, maybe you talked about it before, surely you're not having to pay for all the kind of, you know,
there's a lot of middlemen,
distribution and all the different people, you know, if you can. And but and I can see both that arguments, because there's people saying he can only do this but because he's known, you know, he will get thousands of people like me just saying £3 by Tom York's release something. Whereas if you know,
yes,
if,
he's already, it's like, you know, a brand doesn't need to be sort of, you know, constant advertising after a while. It does, you know, it for itself.
If Digital Outbox's Chris Hutchison tested the water with a paid BitTorrent album.
Oh, that would be inundated. Torrents would fall. The internet would collapse. but yes, you're right. There's still, you know, that's why labels still exist. Music labels still exist, and the music industry is still making a lot of money.
I'm just actually wondering, because £3's like cheap as hell. So it's on Pirate Bay.
I was going to say, this is just going to make it into the normal torrents, so you just go there instead. By downloading a client, it's also
when I say it's on there, it's like massively on there. At the moment, there's like 3,000 cedars.
So it's kind of, I mean, that's the community self imploding, isn't it? You know, they're getting kind of what they've asked for, which is a cheap way of downloading, and they're still choosing to balk at that. But there you go.
Yep. No, I know folk at work. See, when Radiohead did that whole, remember, I can't remember
you
which
could
album.
Choose to pay Rainbows, wasn't it? Not Rainbows.
Was it no, like it was in Rainbows. You're right. Yeah. And you could, so you could get it for free, digital copy. But one of my friends, he says, well, I'm not doing it because it was a 40 or 75p credit card transaction.
Mm.
So I'm not doing it. I'll wait for the torrent. And it's like, there's a generation that is now saying that there's no value in music, there's no value in film, there's no value in TV. It's free. I should be able to get it for free.
There's great value in great TV. There's no value in rubbish TV.
Yeah. How did you enjoy Gogglebox last night? Last week?
I did.
Yeah. Bake Off yesterday.
Loved it.
Yeah.
I don't. My good TV doesn't necessarily have to actually be good TV. You understand? It has to be good for yourself. It's
you're
like
going to end up watching The Kitchen.
The Kitchen.
Yeah.
I've not seen that.
From the makers of Gogglebox, starts next week in BBC, and it follows 10 families in their kitchen making food for the family.
There you go.
Riven.
I don't think it'd be as good as Gogglebox. That is the end of our podcast. So if you want to find out more about what we do, who we are, what we talk about, digitaloutbox.com is the place to go. Email is info@digitaloutbox.com, and there's also Twitter and Skype if you want to. Digital Outbox. I am on Twitter at CheesyUK, and you can follow my racing career at academyracer.co.uk. Ian, where can we find you?
IanD.net for the blog. I'm on Twitter as Sweeper, and I'm just shaking my head because a Polygon article just come out. Spend $100 in PlayStation Store in October and get $15 back. Why don't you just sell it at reasonable prices?
Yeah. And why take the money then give it back? Why not just not take the money?
Diablo 3, £30 on Amazon, I think, at the start of the week. It was £60 on the PlayStation Store.
Yeah, I know. I know. Same for all the games. It's bonkers.
Yeah, yeah.
Bonkers, I tell you. Anyway, let's go kill some stuff in Destiny, and let's look forward to Forza Horizon tomorrow. So we'll be reporting back on that, no doubt, next week.
Yes.
We'll speak to you. Yeah, speak to you then.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.